Okay, I think we're going to go ahead and get started. Welcome, everyone. My name is Wale Alegbi. I'm a senior manager of the eDiscovery and Litigation Support Department at Sullivan and Cromwell in New York. I'm also an ILTA volunteer and part of the conference planning committee, which is why I'm here learning about cloud, even though I work in eDiscovery. I've had the pleasure of working with Rick and Michael over the last few months putting this together. They're really, really solid on this stuff, and I learned a lot in working with them, and I'm sure you guys will get a great benefit from this session. It's called What to Expect When Considering the Cloud. Before we get started, I have a few housekeeping items. Let's put our cell phones on silent. Let's make sure we complete an evaluation form that you'll find within the ILTA app. A quick reminder that this session is being recorded, so I'll remind the panelists to speak clearly into the microphone. And we will have a question and answer session at the end, so I'll walk around with either the catch box or a handheld mic. So please wait for the microphones before we go so we can get it recorded. For all the tweeters, the hashtags are on there, hashtag ILTACon. This is session 090. Make sure you're hashtagging ILTA090, not just hashtag 090. I don't think Twitter works well with just numbers. I was told to say that. Okay, I will turn it over to Rick and Michael to introduce themselves and take us through the session.
Thank you, Wally. So just a quick note, when we originally put this session together, it was going to be a moderated panel. When we had three speakers, when it became a two-speaker panel, we decided to do more of a TED Talk style session today. So hopefully we'll make it engaging and interesting, and by all means, if you have questions, we certainly hope to have time for questions at the end, but if there's something that comes up in the middle of the session where you just can't hold back the excitement and you have to raise your hand, please, by all means, do that. So I'm going to start off with the session. We're going to do a quick introduction. So I'm Rick Vardew. I'm the Director of Projects and Infrastructure Operations with Foley & Lardner. I'm responsible for the firm's data centers, all of its WAN, LAN communications, IP telephony, the desktop side of the infrastructure, and just recently took over the PMO. I've been in the IT services business for a little over 30 years. I've spent the last 17 and a half at Foley & Lardner supporting legal IT. So, Michael?
First, thank you for coming. My name is Michael Kemps. I am the CEO of Innovative Computing Systems. My firm is in its 26th year, so you've got me by four. Our clients are lawyers, law firms, corporate law departments, have been for most of the time of my career. Spanning everything from infrastructure, both internally, externally, cloud, private, hosted, et cetera. Very strong emphasis in things like document management and legal applications, and so we sort of run the gamut. Excited about this topic and sharing it, and this is my second opportunity to do it, and I love talking to people about it and answering questions, et cetera, so I'm looking forward to this.
Awesome. So we'll go ahead and get started. I'm going to cover really what to expect when considering the cloud from a law firm IT perspective. Michael will certainly cover this from the technical consultant side of cloud and what it means. We'll talk about why cloud. We'll talk about the challenges of cloud and some of the conversations that you should expect to have with senior firm management if you haven't had those already. I'm going to focus on that piece first. And then we'll move into more of the technical side of the conversation. So before I get started, I would like to ask this question. How many people in this room feel that you have a really good handle on the different cloud deployment types? Raise your hand. So we have a couple brave souls. I was kind of expecting to see more, but I'm happy that there were fewer. And the reason why I ask that is it's important for Michael and I to have a good understanding of who we're talking to and who our audience is. And I have to share something with you that I saw during a TED Talk. Michael Crandell did a TED Talk on the cloud imperative. I don't know if you've ever seen it. But he started off his TED Talk conversation citing a survey that was done that asked people about cloud services and how much they know about it. And what they found is that one out of every five Americans pretends to know what cloud computing is. But here's what's really interesting. 14% pretended to know what cloud computing is in an interview. But here's even better. 17% pretended to know what cloud computing is on a first date. So think about that for a minute. I'm Rick. I'm an IT professional, and I know about cloud. I don't know if that would work. My wife would kill me, I'm sure.
So I'm waiting for you to say something about Dos Equis or something.
So then what we're going to do is a quick refresher for those who know what the cloud types are. And for the 17% of you in the audience who are preparing for that second date, I hope to prepare you so you don't crash and burn. So, with that said, an introduction on cloud. You know, up until just recently, and Michael, maybe you know when this changed, because I don't. It had to be recently. We only had to worry about describing three different cloud types to upper management. That was private cloud, public cloud, and hybrid cloud, right? And then some knucklehead somewhere decided three just wasn't enough, we had to come up with another. And that's when combination cloud, or sometimes it's referred to as community cloud, was developed. Community cloud? Is that supposed to make us feel better, Michael? You think warm and fuzzy inside, community cloud?
Communities of clouds connected together and interoperational somehow.
Oh, wow. All right. It's exciting stuff, nonetheless. So what I'm going to do as I go through these different cloud deployment types, I'm going to share with you an analogy that I often use when describing cloud types to non-technical people. As technical folks, sometimes we have to do that. So I'm going to talk private cloud first. As law firms, this is the cloud type that I think we're most used to and most law firms are embracing today. So it's you're going to procure all your hardware and software internally. You're going to provision it. You're going to configure it. You're going to deploy it. You're going to maintain it. You're going to manage it. You're going to monitor it. You're going to patch it, and you're going to fix it when it breaks, and you're going to lifecycle it when it comes to the end of its life. You rinse and repeat every time you get to the end of a product's life, and you do that cycle over and over and over again. The key to this is that private cloud requires a lot of care and feeding. And it requires that a law firm have the expertise inside in order to do that. And most law firms, and Foley is no different, we are really starting to suffocate underneath the pressure of that day-to-day operational keep the lights on maintenance work. And more we're finding that 70 to 80% of our cycles, our resource cycles, are spent on doing just that. Flipping the switches, turning the knobs. And that's bad. That's a model we can't sustain for many reasons. And one really big one is that most of the staff that I have on my team are senior level talent. And senior level talent does not want to flip switches and turn knobs. Senior level talent wants to architect new designs and new business solutions. They want to get their hands on new and innovative technologies. And the more we bring in and the more that we try to do ourselves inside, the greater that risk of collapsing under that pressure of and the weight of that operational workload. The scenario that I want to, or the analogy that I want to kind of paint the picture for you that you can take up to senior management if you choose to do so, is family pizza night. Now, you're probably asking yourself, what the heck does cloud computing have to do with family pizza night?
Pepperoni, right? Falls from clouds.
Absolutely.
There you go.
See? I knew I was going to really appreciate having Michael here. So family pizza night is really important for me and my family. We do it quite often. I love pizza, and if you adopt my pizza habits, you too can fit into a 46 short. But family pizza night for us means several things. You know, with pizza, you have lots of options. And hang with me here, folks, because with cloud, you also have a lot of options. And so when we have pizza night, we really like making pizza at home, the homemade pizza style. And that's kind of like private cloud. My wife and I, we go out to the grocery store, we pick up all the ingredients for the pizza, we bring them home, we prepare the ingredients, we configure the pizza, we put the pizza in the oven, we watch the pizza to make sure it doesn't burn, we pull it out when it's done, we cut it up, we put it on our dinnerware, we serve it on the dining room table where my family is waiting, like some kind of cruel Pavlov experiment. But we eat the pizza, we consume the pizza, then we have to clean off our plate, somebody has to clean the table, we have to do the dishes. So there's a lot of work involved in doing family pizza night when you're building that pizza at home. It's the same for private cloud. It's a lot of work involved in doing that. The good thing is, for family pizza night, I have options. The good thing for you, from an IT perspective, is you have options too. You don't have to embrace that private cloud option forever. There are options available to you today. So, public cloud, I'm really excited about this, and I gotta be honest, I'm an infrastructure guy, and I'm excited about cloud. I'm embracing it. I'm a promoter of cloud. I'm a promoter of managed services, and that's because I watch my team every day doing that 70 to 80% turn the knobs, flip the switches. But with public cloud, on pizza night, that's me asking my family, let's get in the car, let's go to our favorite pizza restaurant, let's let somebody else make that pizza for once. And tonight, I might have a deep dish pizza. Next month, it might be thin crust. I have options. It's freedom of choice. And, you know, that deep dish pizza may cost me a little bit more than that thin crust, but that's okay. I want deep dish tonight. So you pay for what you want, nothing more, nothing less. You place the order, you consume the pizza, you pay the bill. That's exactly how public cloud works. You identify the resources you need, you pay for that resource, you consume that resource, nothing more, nothing less. Hybrid cloud, kind of the in-between, right? Sometimes we don't want to jump in the car to go get that pizza. Sometimes we just want to sit at home and watch the football game. Well, at least I do. Or do something else, good family time. So we'll order the pizza in. Or maybe we'll grab a frozen pizza, heaven forbid, from the freezer. Or maybe Papa Murphy's, right? They'll put all the fresh ingredients together for you. All you have to do is stick that pizza in your oven and then eat it. So hybrid, the hybrid IT model, allows us to take baby steps in consuming the cloud. So rather than going all aboard with public cloud and try to bite off too much than, you know, more than you can chew, you can do the hybrid cloud approach where you're going to continue to maintain a certain footprint of infrastructure in your environment, and you're going to marry that with cloud services, and that can be in the form of infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, desktop as a service. Those are all available today.
I thought that was pizza as a service.
That was pizza as a service, wasn't it? I knew it.
Hey, there we go. Wait,
all right, you're catching on. Well, I thought we had some prizes. I think you just won. And then there's combination or community cloud. And this is the one that just really threw my pizza analogy, you know, into the wind. How do you come up with a pizza analogy for combination cloud or community cloud? So here's what I'm going to do. After ILTA, I'm going to go back home. I'm going to talk with my wife, and we're going to schedule a pizza potluck for the neighborhood. We're going to bring the neighbors over, the friends over, the family over. Everyone brings a pizza. We share it. Voila, combination or community cloud. No, to be serious, community cloud is often used by governments, where you have many agencies within a government that share common resources, have common technology needs, and you can point them all to the same cloud-type resources. Software as a service is another good example of community cloud. If you're subscribing to a software as a service that is multi-tenant, and that application is delivered, that same instance of application is delivered to everybody, to all the customers at the same time. Anytime a change is made to that application, that change everyone sees. Everyone consumes that. Combination or community cloud. Application versus infrastructure. You know, certainly one of the things you should expect to have to do is to determine exactly what part of the cloud do you want to consume? Do you want to just stay application focused, or do you want to look at infrastructure? Some organizations are taking their test and dev environment and they're putting that into a cloud, into the cloud, whether that's infrastructure as a service or platform as a service, because you could leverage SQL, SharePoint, and development platforms as part of your test environment in the cloud. Applications might be your DMS, your HRIS, Lit support. Those are all key areas within legal that are quickly becoming managed service standards or software as a service standards across the board. Cloud is so much more than just saving money.
I thought you said it was going to be cheaper.
If you think that going to the cloud is going to save you money, you're probably going to be disappointed. I think longer term, it will. And there are certainly...
Half the room just left.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The truth hurts sometimes.
Yeah, well.
But I'm being honest. If your only focus is to save money, you're going to have a real difficult time. And I would challenge you on that. I think you can save money, and I think you will save money longer term as you embrace more and more cloud services and your infrastructure starts to shrink, right? The things that you're doing inside yourself, as that burden starts to shrink. There are other things that are happening in the industry that I think cloud is really a savior for legal. We're going to talk about security in a minute. But the key point here is it's less about saving money and more about doing things differently. You know, consuming services, procuring IT services different than the old legacy way of thinking. If you want that deep dish pizza tonight, you can go get that deep dish pizza. It's going to cost you a little bit more if you go to the restaurant and consume it. Remember, you're going to order, you're going to consume, you're going to pay, than to do it all yourself. The shift from CapEx to OpEx is attractive to a lot of law firms. It's great. You know, I would love to see us get to more of that utility model, where I don't have to keep purchasing the big iron and put that in my data centers that my team just has to manage and maintain for years to come. You know, if there's a way to do that and consume that via the cloud and not have to spend the firm's money on buying very static and less flexible infrastructure, then, you know, I'd like to do it in the cloud instead. So flexible and dynamic. You know, grow as you need to grow, shrink as you need to shrink. You know, if you can do that, that's definitely and if that's one of your objectives, the cloud is definitely a great consideration. Then security posture. This one is really important because security is front and center for all of us right now. It's in the news every day. Look at the sessions that are available at ILTA this year. How many of them are security focused? A lot, and it's for good reason. And oddly enough, this is one of the areas that I think keeps most firms from embracing the cloud. You know, it's cost, it's security and data privacy, it's uptime and accessibility. Those are the three things I think, you know, really resonate with senior management. And those are the conversations you need to have. And when you talk about security, think about the security teams that you have supporting your firms today. I come from a firm that has 2,200 people, 900 lawyers, 20 offices, three of them international. And I have three full-time engineers managing the security for my firm. That is scary to me. Now, this is no dig on my security engineers. We have two senior engineers that are the best in the business. They know everything. They know all the ins and outs. I would put them up against anybody, any day, anywhere. But that's way too much for three people to manage, to monitor, to maintain. We don't know what we don't know. And I guarantee you there's a lot more going on in your environments than you know. So when you have that conversation about security and senior level management is concerned about taking your data and giving it to somebody else, remind them of what your internal security team looks like. You can have the best technology in the business, the best technology that money can buy, but if you don't have the eyes and the expertise to manage, watch it, maintain it, then you're just kidding yourself. It's fancy hardware sitting in a cabinet with a lot of fancy blinking lights. And it's doing some good. We've got some great technology out there for security. But it's not enough today. It's not enough for the new and emerging threats. So when I look at someone like a Microsoft Azure, or an Amazon, or an IBM, or an AT&T, or VMware, the list goes on. They have specialized teams that do this all day, every day, around the clock. They have security infrastructure that I could never afford to put in my firm. So why not entrust your data to an organization who can truly secure it and can truly put eyes on it 24/7 than trying to do it yourself, as in my case, with three people? And those same three people, they're the ones that put in a full day in the office, and then they have to go home at night and they have to patch the firewalls and all the other fancy appliances that we have from a security perspective. They're doing that in the evenings, they're doing that in the weekends. And again, it's senior level talent. How long can we sustain that before, you know, we all start to lose that senior level talent in our organizations? And then what? Then we're forced to go this direction. I would argue you're much better off planning this kind of a transition on your own time than to have to do it on somebody else's time. And when your clients present that 100-page, and maybe that's a short security survey for your firm, and you have to respond to the questions in that security survey, and you find it more and more difficult with every survey that comes in to answer positively to those questionnaires, this is another option for you. It's like pizza night. You don't have to just stay at home and make that pizza yourself anymore. You can go somewhere else and do it. And you can get some help. Shift from operations focus to innovation focus. HADRBC, complex and costly. Every new system and service you bring in, guess what you got to do? You got to cover HADRBC and backups. Now let's talk about backups for a minute. We are data hoarders. We keep everything forever. And ever. And ever. Our backup windows, our maintenance windows are bursting at the seams. We're a 24/7 law firm. We have attorneys working in Shanghai, Tokyo, and Brussels. And guess what? They're working, their daytime is my nighttime when my engineers are futzing with the systems, right? We're patching. We're upgrading. We're impacting. We're impacting the business. We're not talking about terabytes anymore. We're talking about the P word, and I'm not talking about pizza. I'm talking about petabytes. Petabytes of data. That's crazy. Michael, this is your slide.
This is a beautiful slide.
It is.
How many times have you purchased hardware, gone through a cycle in which you expect to own it for X number of years, gotten to about 2.5 years, and then said, wow, we don't have enough. Wow, we have a project we can't do. Wow, we have to hit the end of that lease. Time and time again, you go out and purchase hardware and software in which you build it, create it, configure it, and do everything else we've been talking about already. And immediately out of the gate, you're like, wow, we have more capacity than we ever knew what to do with. And then you hit the center point in that left slide. And all of a sudden now we're suffering through a time period in which, well, I got to bolt on some more storage, and I got to bolt on some more capacity and do everything else. Why? Instead, take those key applications and say, you know what? I need X amount of performance, I need X amount of CPU, X amount of disk. Configure them appropriately, and when I need more, let them expand, either manually or automatically, depending on how they're configured. Actual provider paid for what they're using, or what we're using, implemented and supported, and expanding as I need it. And by the way, how about contracting? All of a sudden, I'm in a big case. I've got a massive matter. I've got to set up a war room. I need to pull in 20 people, pull this thing together, and finish it. In the old days, it was, damn it, I bought all that hardware. Now I'm done with it. I constrict it. I'm back down. I'm back to my regular firm. We're moving on. New way of thinking. And it really feeds into this CapEx versus OpEx model. And I think traditionally, to that point, law firms have, you know, time and time again found ways to take that capital expenditure and spread it out over time. We've got to lease it. I'm already paying a monthly fee and a lease. The only difference is, in this case, I get to the middle of it and I'm still stuck paying it. Here I have a choice. Here I can spin it up, spin it down, make choices to have contractual commitments or not, and then move forward.
Let's talk about challenges for a minute, managing expectations, because these are those conversations that you have to have with firm management. We talked about data privacy and security, and again, I would encourage you to take that other approach to security and really have that honest conversation with yourself and with firm management to say, look, you know, we're doing everything that we can do. You keep telling us to do more with less. There's only so much that we can do. We have to start thinking about doing things differently now because the old legacy model isn't going to work moving forward. Data privacy and security. Service availability. This is another one. Firm management, and rightly so, is going to ask you, well, if this is now all being hosted out of somebody else's data center that we don't control, what's the uptime like? Are we going to be without service? What is their service like? Did we talk to any of their clients to tell us, you know, how reliable is their service? And those questions are all really good ones, and you have to do your due diligence with whoever you decide to do hosted services with. Make sure you do your homework there. But always keep this in mind. Technology is not perfect. It's not an exact science, even though some of us, you know, try to treat it that way. Even the best technology companies suffer technology failures. Microsoft Azure, Amazon, we've all seen outages from those service providers. They're not perfect, and outages will happen. Just make sure that you give assurance to your firm leadership that you are dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's. You're putting building the SLAs into your contracts, and that's important to do as well. And that everything is being done to help ensure that connectivity and availability is always there. ROI, if there's one thing that I would like everybody to take away from my part of this conversation today, it's that there are two different forms of ROI when you're talking about cloud. There's the return on investment, which I think we all know and we're all familiar with, but then there is reduced operations and infrastructure burden. That ROI is the ROI you need to make sure that you underscore with senior firm management. Staff, you need to have some really frank conversations with your staff. Some of my staff are in this room today. And they'll remember this when I talk about it. Back in 2006, Foley went from a distributed IT infrastructure to a centralized. And we moved all of our core systems and services to a colo data center facility with LexisNexis. It's a lights out facility. That's our primary. And the first conversation, the first thought that came to mind for my staff is, oh my gosh, I'm going to be without a job. And, you know, we couldn't be farther from the truth. What it allowed us to do is do things differently. So now instead of having to recover an Exchange server at one of my remote offices that, you know, we couldn't possibly put clustering everywhere because it was way too expensive. We couldn't have SAN storage out there because it was way too expensive. Guess what? When we centralized and went to a centralized data center, we were able to take advantage of clustering, SAN storage, high availability, DR, BC, all of those things that are important to keeping services up and running. So the conversation you have to have today now with your team is very much the same. This is about doing things differently. This is about being able to take advantage of new technologies and new ways of doing things. We all have to be able to adapt and change to the changing times. We did it back in 2006. We can do it today. The days of the entire infrastructure being forklifted out and having somebody manage it, maybe that's coming down the road. I don't know. I wish I had the crystal ball and could see that. But today, the hybrid model seems to be working really well. And if I can take that 70 to 80% operational workload, bring that down to 50, now we can innovate. Now we can talk about innovating again, right? And we need to be able to do that. So the fear of outsourcing, we have to work through that.
I have a secret for you.
Thank you.
Other people make pizza better than you.
Yes, that's right. That's a true statement. Change control and maintenance. This is another tough one. You know, you're used to doing everything inside. You have control. You don't have to go to some outside source to say, hey, you know, you can't do that, or, you know, things have to be up. The key is, when you're working with these providers, is to make sure that their environments are robust enough to hopefully, when they do their maintenance, they're not impacting your services. But sometimes that's going to happen. Sometimes upgrades are going to happen. Especially the software as a service model, when you're all sharing the same instance of a software package, DMS is a big one and very popular and legal right now. I don't have to name names. I think the two big providers are both doing cloud services now. One maybe has a bigger jump on the other. But the fact of the matter is, they change, they create updates, they install updates and do upgrades to their systems. And we have to be ready to adapt to that. ActiveX, Java, ouch, that stuff can be painful. My goodness. But it happens. It's just a different time, it's a different way of doing things, and we have to adapt and adjust.
What's interesting is, when we were moving to centralized data models away from distributed, in that same time period, when did you do it? Would you say 2006?
2006.
Right. So around that same time period, the questions were this. Is it secure? Is it going to be fast enough? How's the performance going to be? Can we trust it? What are the SLAs? It's the same.
Absolutely.
I like to say that it's like taking a single-site law firm and all of a sudden making it a multi-site firm. All the same things apply.
We talked about applications and services. So a cloud strategy, you know, what is your strategy? Is it infrastructure focused? Is it application focused? I think we touched enough on that already. HA, DRBC, again, very complex. And our clients are really demanding nothing but the best when it comes to HA, DRBC. This is a great way to do it. And then the user experience. I can't underscore this enough. I don't care what we talk about today. If you can't get the user experience right, you're in trouble. So, and this is true with any cloud service that you may be considering, make sure you pilot, make sure you test, and test again. Pilot and then deploy. And make sure you listen to the feedback from your lawyers and your users. I'm gonna hand this off to you, Michael.
Model changes when we do this. Today, you pick up that, you know, bolt-down firewall and you have it delivered, and maybe it has all ports open, and maybe it doesn't, depending on the manufacturer. You have to go in and custom configure it and have all the security knowledge. Cloud environment, it's all shut down and closed by default. You go into the environment and say, you know what, these are the applications I need to run, these are the ports I need open. Do I need them open only inside my own local network? Or do I need them open to the internet? And how am I going to secure those? Encryption, high availability and penetration testing. Everyone wants data encrypted now, whether it's in transit or at rest. How the cloud providers are going to actually support that, how they support the keys, how they manage it. High availability. It's all well and good that you give me my sessions and that I can start them and stop them and do all the above, but are they highly available? What happens when an application fails in one location? Do I have the ability to fail it over to the other? Can I snapshot it? Does it happen automatically? Do I have to do it manually? To the point of security, we covered this some, so I'll go quickly. There is absolutely, unconditionally, no way that even a firm of this size or larger, to the point of the three security engineers, can make the investment and secure the environment the way that some of these largest cloud providers can do so. Case in point, here's a funny story. I was speaking with a firm who shall remain nameless, and older partner, kind of going nuts about this discussion, and it wasn't even to the point of doing infrastructure as a service. It was frankly talking about, I'm avoiding vendor names. It was talking about an email continuity spam filtering service. Now everybody knows what it is. I don't want my data in the cloud. I don't trust it in the cloud. Well, where's your data now? It's in that closet, right down the hall, and it's secure because it is locked with a deadbolt. Seriously? So what do you consider when you have to address this? We're used to having an environment where everything is contained within our office, in smaller firms or even larger with fully meshed MPLS networks. We make this decision, in particular, if we have a small number of offices, we connect to a public, for example, a public or even private cloud provider. The days of a single internet connection, no matter how large, the days of a single firewall and a switch connected to that, or a single DMZ, all configured all by itself and connected, if it goes down, we still have our internal network. No, you don't. No, you don't. You have redundant paths, you have redundant firewalls, and ideally you have redundant providers. Not the same fiber, not the same cable, not the same something. I have two providers. Oh, that's great. The fiber got cut to the building. One provider was subbing from the other provider. Oh, man, now what? I guess I'll go home and work. WAN acceleration. Functioning in a single office and being in an environment where I have local desktops and local servers, performance is fine. It's great. It's what I'm used to on a daily basis, what I've been doing for half my career, right? All of a sudden, I move things around and I have things in different places, sort of like a multi-office law firm running things across a wide area network. How am I going to do it? Does the cloud provider that I'm choosing, public, private, hybrid, however I'm going to create it, do they in fact support WAN acceleration, and is it the same vendor's product, or you know, will they support the same vendor's product that you already own? And again, public, private, hybrid, we can mix it all together, and ideally maybe start hybrid, pick an application, deploy it.
Another thing to consider with WAN capacity, you know, fully, you know, I feel very fortunate we have three WAN circuits going to each one of our offices. We over-provisioned WAN when we did this because we wanted one WAN for video, one WAN for VDI, and one for everything else. But that everything else WAN includes internet. So when you're talking about cloud and embracing more cloud services, you have to make sure that you watch that WAN capacity. And if your internet POPs are centralized to your data centers instead of having internet presence in each of your office locations, you know, all that internet traffic and all that hosted service traffic is going to go over your WAN. So make sure that you take that into account when you're designing the right model for your firm. And just like there are options for pizza and options for cloud, there are options for connecting to hosted service providers today. AT&T, and I shouldn't mention the name, one of my WAN carriers is, you know, offers an option where they can deliver secure internet to each of my office locations over MPLS. Now there's a new option, right? Because now I can connect all my cloud service providers to the Foley network as an MPLS connection. An MPLS connection that I can tag with quality of service markings. I can control the traffic. I can prioritize the traffic. And that gives me another whole new set of options that I didn't have when I was just using internet. So those are other things that you should consider when you bring WAN and internet into the equation. You have some options there too.
So does that mean that every phone call you make will be of high quality except for the one you make to the public cloud provider?
That might be it.
Right. All right. So in selecting a provider, and this makes reference to a public cloud provider and some of their terminology, but some of the things to consider, private or public, where's my data? How am I accessing it? What's my latency? And looking at performance, you know, if I'm in California, my provider's in Virginia on the East Coast, we'll even forget out of country and legal issues with that. How much latency am I going to have? And, you know, back to the WAN acceleration conversations. SLAs. SLAs vary all over the place, not in terms of the provider guarantee, but in terms of how redundant and reliable you design your own network. So, you know, to the pizza point, they'll roll out the pizza dough for you. Do you want one pizza or two? Do you put enough pepperoni on both sides or do you like pineapple? And when one person's done eating the pizza, is there a spare on the other side? All of those considerations. Exit strategy is a huge, huge issue with this consideration. I take all my firm's data. What was that word starting with a P? Okay. I take all of my firm's data, move it to a public or private cloud provider, and suddenly the industry moves a little further forward and I'm not happy. How do I get it out? How quickly do I get it out? Where is it? Not to mention security and confidentiality and everything else that we've already been through. Let's say I've just had it and I'm done. Whether it's one application or more, I got to pull it out, I got to design a strategy for it, and know how I'm going to do that in advance. Do you have import-export tools? Are you using VMware today? Am I going to retain VMware so I have the ability to go back to it if I need it? Can I then export those skipping vendor names, can export those images that are up on those other cloud providers back down and out so that I can grab them back or give them to somebody else? Cost. Cost not so much as cloud more expensive than what I have on site. Cost from a perspective of making things more highly available and redundant in a cloud environment costs more money. How important is it to you? How large is your firm? What are your practice areas? What do your partners think about this? When you partner up with an external provider, you have shared responsibility. So that provider says, okay, look, we have facilities, public or private. We have a far more physically secure environment than you could ever have. We have all this, the infrastructure, storage, networking, virtualization, everything. But time out. All we're going to do is hand you, potentially, the operating systems. You're going to bring in the applications. You're going to configure our firewalls. You're going to make decisions on your own so that together we have a secure environment, right? If I go put everything up on Amazon, we'll use that as an example, I'm not picking it by say here. I go put everything up on Amazon, and that's all well and good, and they've done all their security and all their testing. And I go configure my applications and open up a bunch of ports, whose problem is that? So there is a shared responsibility in these environments to ensure that we have this functioning well. Support and licensing, what changes? Firms want to be up 24/7, period, paragraph, end of statement. Is my support dedicated? I have an issue, I make a phone call, how quickly am I getting a response? Do I have access to the back end? Is it easy to get to? What are the contractual requirements? How long? How much? Can I escape? Where's my data? All those things. Operating system platforms, this is great, right? I have to ask this question. Who still has at least one single Windows Server 2003 box left? It's not running in the cloud. So how am I going to transition that? Do I have to upgrade applications? All those considerations. Vendor licensing requirements. Most cloud, in particular, large cloud providers, public cloud providers, they either own the software to begin with, who shall remain nameless, or they have arrangements with those providers so that in the hourly recurring fees that I'm paying for the instances that I'm spinning up, I have access to a Windows Server license. I go to upgrade that. I've already paid for the instance. I upgrade it to whatever, Windows Server 2016 when it's available. Bam, same thing. No surprise licensing cost. Microsoft Software Assurance. Not to get too into the weeds, but that agreement, in particular under an enterprise agreement, which SA is still running, gives me the portability and ability to take a lot of those Microsoft services and throw them up on somebody's cloud. Fully supported. You do have to notify them, by the way. Backup and DR. Where I put my data, how I snapshot it, how available it is, whether or not I have instances running in more than one location, where that location is, and again, the cost of all of that and the decisions associated with it. Very, very critical considerations in all of this. Whether I'm simply replicating what I have up somewhere, and want some of it available, or whether I move a lot of it to a particular location that becomes primary, and then replicate it, duplicate it, snapshot it into another location. Is it just data that was snapshotted, or do I also have my server instances there? Is everything running there? Can I spin it up? Do I have snapshots running on a recurring, regular basis? How long? How easy is it? Can I get to it through a single pane of glass? Can I control it? Can I access it? And when I'm in a panic, frankly, and everything's on the line and firm's asking what's going on, do I need to reach out and open a ticket while my firm's down, or do I have the ability to actually get to it, handle it, and support it myself? Vendor marketplaces. This is actually a very interesting thing about cloud computing. Large, in particular, public cloud providers have made arrangements with other vendors in which you can go into their marketplace, and rather than going and procuring software in the typical way, where you go and license it on a per-seat basis or a per-server basis, and then pay for it perpetually one time, they say, no, no, no. You want to try our solution, which is, for example, incredibly expensive? Go ahead, spin it up. We'll charge you by the hour. Spin up a server, pay for it for a few hours, try it, pilot it, evaluate it, don't like it, pay the bill, shut it off. To the point of innovation, wow, I could never get my hands on that incredibly expensive solution before. Now I can get a taste of it so that I can actually create that ROI, or both types of ROI, around selling it internally. If it's not if, it's when. To you.
Any questions? Here's where we have the Microsoft or the microphone box. Okay.
Scared the hell out of me. When dealing with, you know, international offices and all the rules and regulations, did you have to go to clients overseas to ensure that you could actually put the data in the cloud? Were there any, you know, regulations that prevented certain apps that couldn't? Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, I can speak, you know, from the Foley model. Our international offices, all of the data that they work with resides here in the States. So same holds true with our cloud service provider that happens to be our DMS. All of the data from Shanghai, Tokyo, Brussels, it all stays here within the States. So it was all reviewed by our internal lawyers. And you know, you really, when we talked about earlier about dotting the I's and crossing the T's, to your point and to your question, you have to make sure that you get the right legal minds on those agreements and some of the challenges that we talked about. Make sure that you're getting that legal advice and covering that side of the equation as well. Really important.
So to tee up the infrastructure side of that question, let's just say that your legal minds reviewed that and they said, oh no. We want Asia-Pac data in Asia, and we absolutely demand that UK-based data be outside of the United States, and we don't want to be subject to the Patriot Act. Sorry to bring that up. Mm-hmm. Fine. These public cloud providers, as an example, have Asia-Pacific regions. They have a UK region. So you have the ability, say, we'll use a DMS as an example. Say you have three databases rather than one. I host some of my data in all three of the locations. I put it all in public clouds. But then I can then restrict, A, who has access, B, is it cross-searchable, you know, C, where does the data physically store? Maybe all the U.S. people don't, you know, all the entire U.S. firm absolutely cannot have access to these matters behind this ethical wall, and the data is all in this location, encrypted, you know, at rest and in transit. All can be accomplished in a public environment.
Any other questions?
I think the idea is that we were going to throw that around, but we were worried about people's coffee.
My question has to do with security. I mean, we looked at doing a cloud thing maybe a year or so ago, and while, you know, they had good security and, yeah, a lot better in some ways than we could ever give, you couldn't do any. It was one size fits all. You couldn't tune anything. It's like, well, right now I have this solution that, you know, limits where my users can go on the internet. And I have, you know, so I have a device. Well, how do I put that in the cloud? Well, they don't have one of those yet. Or it's like, well, how do I look at what's going through the firewall? I'm using this security service to do all my security. Well, I can't use that service anymore, you know. So it kind of seemed like it was all one size fits all. You kind of lost control of your security, and I can't look at your firewall logs or whatever, and it just, you kind of lose some stuff. So what's your feeling on that?
You know, I think it's to the same point as what happens when you go with a SaaS provider and you can't get access to the back end, and then you just, you know, pull half of the right side of your head out getting frustrated over it. You know, the question is whether or not you're willing to sacrifice and, for lack of better terms, put up with those changes because the industry is adapted. I don't think it's entirely true anymore, in particular some providers, that it is one size fits all, that you can't, for example, take a vendor's firewall, run it on a Linux server in that hosted environment, and use a software virtualized version of their firewall to do things like, you know, watch the traffic that's going through the ports rather than just depending on the public cloud provider's firewall. You can today do all those things, and that marketplace I mentioned is an example that supports it.
I may have to throw this one.
Do you have any coffee? No? Chuck.
Thank you. I'm curious to know if you have a checklist of things that one should ask or inquire when looking at the public or the community pizza slash providers as part of one's due diligence.
We need a pizza checklist.
You know, absolutely, yes. And I'll tell you a great source for that. We're all getting bombarded with security questionnaires from our clients. If you haven't already developed one of your own that you give to third-party service providers, you should do that. And that becomes a great basis for a checklist for any type of managed service or cloud service provider that you may want to partner with. Make sure that, from a security perspective, all the right boxes are checked. And where they're not checked, you know, you're going to have to make a decision as to whether or not that's a risk that your firm is willing to accept or not. Certainly checklists for everything else, and that checklist is pretty lengthy. Absolutely, you have to. Yeah.
Law firms with banking clients get a lot of those questionnaires.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Question over here.
Hey, I've been to a couple of sessions regarding like moving to the cloud and that, and I'm just wondering, is security always the biggest thing to consider? It seems to be an ongoing theme in addition to the other security themes here, which I understand its relevance, but are there other things that I know you went over them, but are there other factors that are just as important or more important and the focus just gets shifted to security due to concerns, or is security really the number one thing when moving to the cloud?
I think from a legal perspective, from a law firm industry perspective, security is so front and center in every conversation when it comes to data today that you can't really have a conversation about cloud without really addressing the security concerns first. Now, I think we laid out a different angle on security where I think you can make a really good argument for at least, you know, certain service providers being much more secure and have much greater ability to protect your data than you can yourself. But I would have to say security is probably the toughest argument.
So it's a tough argument, but in a sense it's a reverse, right?
Yeah.
Because there's, I'm not going to say massive paranoia, but absolutely it's the first thing that comes up. Cloud security. We've got to get through that first and then we'll deal with it, right? So from a psychological perspective, it's a huge deal. Aside from the fact that, yes, obviously it's important, whether it's, you know, public, private, hybrid, or anything, it's a big deal with everything that's been happening.
I'd say DR and cost are, you know, probably the second and third.
You know, is it the most important thing? No, it's all important.
And I think, if I may add to your point, I think there are other areas too you have to take a look at. And I'm coming from the information governance standpoint, and I think there are 8 principles, and security and protection is one of them. And then we have availability. You want to make sure that when you go to access the information, it's there. Retention, when it's time to dispose of it, they will be able to dispose of it so that during discovery, they don't come back to haunt you. If you can apply legal hold to it, that's another thing. So there are a whole list from the information governance standpoint. We have 8 principles, and you want to make sure that your cloud provider addresses all those 8 principles. And I can give those to you after this. But and great protection point. And security is definitely one of them. And otherwise, during discovery, they can discover everything in the cloud, and you want to make sure that it addresses that area as well. And then retention, and I can go on and on and on. So yeah, there are other areas too that you have to take a look at, with exception of security and privacy.
Yes, excellent. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate you coming. Thank you.